Everyone, I'm Adria.
And I'm Brooke.
And this is What Have You Done?
Did you notice in the last... Sorry, I'm already talking over you.
I know.
Did you notice in the last episode that I put the little sound at the end?
I did notice that. I was like, oh, that's cute.
I was like, I'm just going to do that and then see what people say. Nobody said anything about it, but...
I know. Yeah,
I don't know. Just a cute little end.
Yeah, it sounds better than just dropping off into silence, I guess.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought so.
Yep.
Anyway...
So how have you been?
Oh.
Great.
You've been good. Sick. Oh my God. Were we not just saying how well this was going and how we weren't talking over each other?
I know. The bad part is, like, I'm looking at you too, so I can see that you're talking and I'm still going. No. Yeah, I've been sick. I was actually just bitching about it for like a week. And which sucks because I feel like I haven't been sick in a long time, so... It's really been, like, doing a number on me because I'm 40 now, so apparently everything just hits me harder.
I feel like being sick in the summer, too, sucks. Like, just because everything's already so hot. Like, it's a million fucking degrees in my apartment right now. And I can't run the fan because you can hear that. The AC does nothing, so that's not worth it, but...
Yeah, it's super humid out right now. I just ran out really quickly to get a coffee, and I was like, ugh, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
You know what I got this morning? So Dunkin' Donuts has their fall stuff out now, and they have this thing called a Dunk-a-Latte. So it's like iced, and it's espresso with coffee milk blended in, like instead of like cream or creamer, it's just coffee milk. It is so good.
That's good. Huh. I don't like coffee or drink coffee. So. I run on no caffeine.
I don't know how.
Which is probably why I don't run so well, but...
Jesus, that's why you do...
The alternative is... Yeah. The alternative is feeling like shit and being anxious, so...
Mm-hmm. That's true. Am I breaking up on your end or no?
A teeny bit, but it's not bad.
Okay. Brian's kind of like that, too. If he has too much coffee, he gets very, I call it aggravated, but it's anxiety. It definitely, like, he gets so much pent-up, like, anxious energy that it almost comes out aggressive, which I can understand. Like, I'll see, on the weekends, he gets up way earlier than I do, and sometimes if I sleep in... Late, I'll wake up and he'll be like pacing through the house because he's drank a pot of coffee already and is trying to get his energy out and just furiously cleaning. I'm like, hey.
That's funny.
Where have you been up to?
Well, life has been a bit of a dumpster fire. But everything is smoothing out now.
That's good. What's been going on? Just like money stuff?
Yeah, and the place Katie used to work is an absolute piece of shit, and I won't name them, but a lot of people that know me know what place that is, and I also grew up there, so it's sad how many places suck and how many people really suck when it gets down to it, and we'll not hesitate to treat you like shit and absolutely screw you over, so.
Right.
But.
No, that's well, she has a new place now, right?
Yeah, already, so.
Good.
Thankfully, it was gonna happen anyway. It shouldn't have happened the way it did, but she needed to get out of there anyway, because they suck. Oh, shit. So I didn't make sure my fucking things are recording in the right way.
Oh, no.
Did you?
Yes.
It doesn't let me do it. I'll have to hit pause to look at it. I don't know where it's recording from.
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's going. Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, mine is too. We're good.
Well.
Anyway, so mid-rant when I realized I'm a fucking idiot, even though nothing was actually wrong, but yeah. I'm not too confident on that. But yeah. People are a piece of shit.
It stinks in the restaurant industry because I feel like there's so many people to hire. Like, you can hire servers and stuff so quickly that they really don't care how they treat their workers. It sucks.
No, they don't care. And the friend of hers that just quit, both, like, they were just, like, everybody's reaching out to her and was like, I noticed something was off. But, like, okay, well, while she's there, you're not bothering to ask if she's okay.
Yeah.
You're only asking now because she's... Because she quit.
You don't care. You just
like,
want
you don't actually give
so
a shit.
You can talk to your friends and blah, blah, blah. Whatever.
Right. So, it's just... I don't know. It's just all a fucking joke. That place is a joke, and I hope that they get what's coming to them because they kind of already are, so...
Yeah,
and we're moving on to bigger and better things.
Watch it. It'd be a blessing in disguise because it sounded like she's been stressed there for a while. So, time to move on.
Yes. No, that place has been terrible on her mental health anyway. And, you know, honestly, it kind of pushed that friend of hers out too. And hopefully people will just get out of there. The good people will get out of there and just be able to get at a better place and... not feel like shit going to work every single day.
I know. Like us.
Yeah.
You sure she doesn't want to be a dog groomer?
No. She said she would lose her mind.
Yeah. I say that to Brian, too. The minute a dog barked more than once, he'd be out of there.
Yeah, that's right. No, that's exactly what it would be for her. It'd just be way too overstimulating. And I'm like, yeah, sometimes I have to put my headphones in real tight and turn the music up real loud and just do it as fast as I can, but...
Yes. Yeah. All right, so we're talking Arizona today.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Arizona. It seems like it's one of those states that there's like, what's going on over there? All those western states, it's hard. Like, are you a desert? Do you have mountains? It seems like they... all those states, like, you can do, like, it's all different climates there.
And it's just also, like, and it changes, like, overnight, and it's so vast, you can get, like, lost out there so easy.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Phoenix Forgotten?
No.
That's a good movie. It's an alien movie.
Oh. It doesn't sound like it would be.
I think Mary showed me it forever ago, but that's a good one, and obviously it's... it's about, like, an alien abduction in Phoenix, Arizona. And it's shot, like, almost like a Blair Witch Project. So it's, like, first person, like, the kids recording. It's a good one. I'm not, like, usually... it's, like, as realistic, I guess, as an alien movie can be.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. But it's, again, it's just focuses on, like, they're out in the middle of fucking nowhere. And shit can just go crazy because there's so much... just nothing.
What is it called? Phoenix what?
Forgotten.
Phoenix Forgotten. I'll have to check that out. I like alien stuff.
That's a good one. I think you'd like it. Anyway.
Right. What so kind of... I have a news story first.
That's right. Dur.
Yeah. This time, I didn't do like a funny one. I found one that I thought was interesting, mainly because I've looked into this before because... you'll see. You'll understand. So, this is actually from April of this year, and headline reads, Governor Hobbs signs Grandpa in the Garden Bill, paving way for human composting in Arizona.
Grandpa in the Garden?
I know. That's what made me look at the article, was because I was like, Grandpa in the Garden?
Huh. I haven't heard of that.
So... yeah, so this is from the Phoenix A to Z Family newspaper. Traditional burials and cremations will no longer be the only options in Arizona when a loved one passes away. Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs recently signed HB 2081 into law, which will provide a new eco-friendly alternative for disposing of someone's body. The process is called human composting or natural organic reduction. Instead of being buried or cremated, remains are turned into fertile soil that can be used in someone's backyard or garden. The company Earth Funeral was one of the first companies to provide the service. Earth Funeral founder Tom Harries says more and more people are looking for another option when it comes to how they want their bodies disposed of after death. The beauty of being transformed into soil versus cremation is the process, said Harry. It's a gentle and natural process versus a fire cremation. It's better for the environment, which is important for many people. The procedure costs around $5,000, which is significantly less than a traditional burial, which can cost more than $12,000. The cost of cremation can run between $1,000 and $2,000. Arizona will become the eighth state to approve human composting. Several other states have introduced the bill to allow the process as well. And then I looked up what states it's legal in, and it's Washington, Colorado, Oregon, Vermont, California, New York, Nevada, Arizona, Maryland, Delaware, Minnesota, and Maine.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that was such a popular thing.
Yeah. So I heard of this a couple years ago. I don't know if it's the same process, but I've heard of a thing called a bio urn, which you can, because I would personally want to be cremated. So you can take the ashes from your cremation and put them into like an urn that you can bury that can be like you can grow into a tree.
I've heard of that.
Like something can grow. Yeah. So I think this is the same kind of idea.
That's cool.
I went to the site for earthfuneral.com, and this is just like a little blurb from their website. It says, "Return to nature. We're specialists in soil transformation, an environmentally friendly alternative to burial and cremation, which is sometimes referred to as human composting. Over a 45-day process, we gently transform a body into nutrient-rich soil. Families choose how much soil..." Oh, my goodness. Sorry.
Mosby.
I know. Jesus Christ. Mosby. That scared the crap out of me. Okay. So let's start again. Return to nature. Over a 45-day process, we gently transform a body into nutrient-rich soil. Families choose how much soil they'd like returned to scatter or plant, and the remainder is donated to local conservation projects for land and restoration initiatives. The soil becomes a means to return nutrients from our bodies to the natural world. In turn, we restore forests, sequester carbon, and revitalize challenged ecosystems. Yeah, that's human composting.
That's cool.
The site is actually pretty cool. Like, when you look at it, it looks very classy. Like, it doesn't look like something sketchy or anything. Like, they show you pictures of, like, sample soil and stuff. It pretty much looks like, well, they don't have pictures of it, obviously, but it sounds like it's one of those body farm type of situations where they kind of, like, let you naturally decompose into soil.
Huh.
I don't know. That's just me pulling it out of my ass from the couple pictures I saw online, but looks pretty interesting. Gonna have to look into that.
Yeah, I definitely would do something like that, or, like, the tree thing.
Yeah, something about being buried is a little disturbing to me.
Yeah, and there's, like, no room, so...
That's true.
Sometimes I think about that, and it kind of weirds me out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's something that weirded me out the other... We were watching something on TV, and... Oh, I was watching the Gypsy Rose Blanchard Lifetime series that she has, and they were visiting her mom's grave in Louisiana.
Wasn't it her grandma's grave?
Oh, maybe it was her... Yes, it was her grandma. Sorry. Mm-hmm. See? You've seen it.
I have seen it. Oh, my God.
Have we seen the same show? I don't think we've ever mentioned shows that we've both seen.
That's fair.
But the graves are all above ground there because of the water table. Did you notice that in the cemetery? That they're all like big blocks?
I didn't notice. But yeah. To me, that was just like, wow, that's a giant headstone.
Oh, yeah. No, it's because they're all buried above ground.
Yeah, that would be pretty terrible if they all started to, like, float up.
Yeah. I think that happened during Katrina. Like, a lot of the old burials floated up to the top.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I went in a little bit different of a direction with the story that I have, because I feel like I've been talking a lot about death. So this isn't necessarily a happy story, but it's not like a murder or anything.
Yeah. Katie really liked your last story. I feel like I heard a couple people be like, that was a really good one. The one with the Robinson family or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one was creepy.
Yeah, and like just the not knowing for sure.
Right. Well, if people liked not knowing for sure, then they'll probably like this one too then. This story is been named the Hatbox Baby.
The Hatbox Baby?
Yeah. So a box you would put a hat in.
And there's a baby in there?
So there was a baby in there.
Okay. I'm following along so far.
Nailed it. On Christmas Eve, 1931, a couple named Ed and Julia Stewart were driving home from a day of hiking on a desert road near Florence, Arizona, where their car... I put got a flat tire, but it sounds like more their car broke down.
Okay.
In the road. Okay. Ed got out of the... Did you have a question? Or no?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Thought you said something. Ed stepped out to fix the problem while Julia stayed in the car with her two younger cousins that had come along with them. After a little bit, Julia took the opportunity to get out and stretch her legs when she noticed there was a small box near the road that seemed to have a noise coming from inside of it. Thinking that it might have been a kitten or a puppy that someone had abandoned, she opened it to find a small 7-day-old baby girl inside.
Yikes.
Now this is... I looked up the area that they found her, and this is middle of nowhere. Like, there's no stops, anything like this on the road.
It seemed like it was driven out to the middle of nowhere on purpose and left.
Yes. Okay. Yep. The shocked couple brought the baby to the Mesa Police Department and into the hands of Constable Joe Mayer, who was the only officer on duty that night because it was Christmas Eve. Mayer brought the small baby to the hospital to be checked out, and the next day on Christmas held a press conference to try and find any information about the abandoned baby.
I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So it's winter. Is it cold in Arizona then? Or do you know what the weather would be like?
I want to say that it was kind of cold. Because right. It was out in the middle of the desert and it was nighttime, so
that's pretty sure cold. Even cold. Like doesn't it get cold like that in the summer even sometimes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely not warm outside. Okay. As you can imagine, getting on TV and saying that a baby was found in the middle of the desert, a bunch of people called in tips and wanted to take the baby and all this. So it was a pretty big thing when it happened. He also mentioned that he would be forming a search party to search the area where she was found in case anyone else may be there. He stated, for all we know, the mother may still be out there dead or incapacitated. With no real clues to go on, they found nothing in the search of the desert in the surrounding areas. And after a week, the baby was put up for adoption. A woman named Faith Morrow and her husband at the time, Henry, became her parents and named her Sharon. So, and then you don't hear a lot about anything. Sharon lived a fairly normal life for the next 55 years. And didn't know. Yeah, she never even knew she was adopted until 1986. This happened in 1931.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Her mother was actually battling breast cancer and had been given less than a year to live. Yes. So she said it to herself that it was finally time to let Sharon know what happened, and she got, like, her adoption records together and everything and let her in on the family secret.
Hmm.
Sharon could not believe that such a big story was kept for her for so long. And when her mother passed away 5 months later, she sought out to try and find her birth parents.
Interesting. Okay.
She reached out to journalist John Diana, who ended up going on a nearly 30-year journey with her to find her family.
30 years after she's already 55?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I know. With her information being put out into the media again, the story eventually made its way onto the TV show Unsolved Mysteries, which led to a slew of new tips, but nothing really concrete. Time was not really on Sharon's side either. Being half a century later, many of the people who were around when she was a baby passed away. She was able to meet with the former police chief, who initially took her back in 1931. When they met, he was 95 years old, but he still remembered the day that she was brought to him as clear as anything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He said, "There's a lot of questions about where you came from that night, questions that may never be answered. God knows a lot of folks had theories about what did and didn't happen. Was somebody hiding in the sagebrush and watching to make sure you'd be found? Was that good-hearted couple who brought you in telling us the whole story? Nobody knows for sure. But this much I am certain of, the baby put into my hands that night was clean and well cared for, and you were meant to be found to give it a good home." That's sweet. So she was found, I know you're asking if it was cold. When she was found, she was in really good shape. Like, it didn't seem like she had been there for very long.
Okay.
Like, she was 7 days old, but it wasn't like she was a mess, you know, or really skinny or anything like that. So that 1989 Unsolved Mystery episode kind of alluded to the possibility that the couple that found Sharon, Ed and Julia Stewart, were actually the parents to the baby and were trying to give her up. After the episode aired, they got nonstop calls from family and friends asking if this was true, and the couple maintained until both of their deaths that the car really did break down that day, and it was all just a very fortunate coincidence. In 2003, John interviewed their only living daughter, Wilma, who told them that the Hatchbox baby story was never talked about in their household. She only found out about it after she read it.
Who was that?
So this is the daughter of the couple that found the baby.
Okay.
Because I guess in the episode, they never came out and said it, but they were really questioning if they were the actual parents of the baby. So mm-hmm. I think it made them look bad. So Wilma only found out about it when she read it in her grandmother's diary. The wife of the couple, Julia, told her that she preferred not to think about it because what was supposed to be a joyous finding will always be shadowed with the dark clouds of suspicion. That couple, Ed and Julia, did have to appear in court a few months after Sharon's discovery as part of a child abandonment case. Their story from that day and their overall character were brought into question, but eventually the court determined that they had no relation to the baby. Later, DNA tests would confirm the same. So that's been disproven that they have any relation to the baby that was found.
Okay.
In 2011, the writer or the journalist that Sharon had reached out to, John, decided to do another story about the Hatbox baby because he really wanted to crack the case for Sharon before she passed away because she's just turning 80 at this point. Like he had many times before, he sat with her at the coffee table going through a box of records her mother had kept and found a letter that neither of them had seen before. It was in a small envelope and just a single piece of paper with random notes written down in handwriting that Sharon identified as her adopted mother's Faith's handwriting. All the note said was, "Mother Edna Sherman Rowe, born 1914, died 1949, plane crash. And then 1935, your mother saw you, she was 21 then." So, and that's all it said. So it was just like a weird, like someone just jotted down things they wanted to remember type of thing.
Do we know who wrote that note?
Yes. So Sharon was baffled where this letter came from. She did remember that she had obtained some newspaper clippings and old records from a friend named Dorothy Wooden that her mother had asked to hold on to some things for safekeeping while Sharon was younger. So I guess she was trying to just hide like, in case Sharon went through stuff, she didn't want her to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy had misplaced some of the paperwork, but found some years later, and Sharon was thinking that the letter showed up in those findings. After analyzing Dorothy's family history, John discovered that Dorothy was actually a niece to Edna Rowe, who was mentioned in Faith's notes. It took 5 years to track down Dorothy, who is still alive, but she admitted that she remembered the Hatbox Baby stories, but admitted that Edna had no relation to Sharon. She said that maybe Faith had just written it down, just kind of trying to piece things together for herself and seeing what might have made sense. So that led nowhere. When almost all hope was lost, a woman named Bonnie Belza reached out to John after hearing him speak at a conference and offered him some help. I didn't get into it. This writer, I'm going to send you a link to the story that he wrote. He did so much DNA work, like family tree work from where she might have come from. It was insane. Like, it was crazy detailed, and just no, they couldn't find anything for her. So that's he talked weird. About it at a journal. Yeah, at a journalism conference. And this woman, Bonnie, who is a genealogist, offered to create a family tree for her based off DNA. So at this point, she's 85 years old. She's had her DNA taken a couple times and really nothing. So she was kind of, I don't think at this point she was really thinking anything was going to happen with it. They submitted her DNA to Ancestry.com and 23andMe. And on December 19th, 2 days after Sharon's 86th birthday, she finally got answers that she was looking for over 30 years of searching. Her birth parents were identified as Frieda Strachbein and Walter Coots Routh. Walter and Frieda had married on August 1st, 1931, 4.5 months before Sharon was born, and had another baby in 1933, which meant Sharon had a brother she knew nothing about. And this was confirmed through, I think they went back through third cousins. Like, they found a third cousin of hers through Ancestry.com and worked their way back through the family tree to find this.
Damn.
When crazy. When looking up Sharon's brother, James, John actually discovered the news that he died 2 days before they found out he even existed. So they came, like, this close to her meeting her brother.
Damn.
They also found a girl named Emily Kuntz, that came up as her biological niece. And how that came up was that that girl was actually put up for adoption. She never knew that she was adopted. And she put her stuff into a DNA thing and came up with barely any relatives either. So by creating their family tree, they actually found that they were related through Sharon's mother's sister? Or something like that. So, but it was really sad, because then that girl that they found was able to reach out to her mother, and her mother didn't really want anything to do with her. It's just sad.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a very happy ending for her. And Sharon didn't really seem to care about, like, knowing her parents' identity either. Because at that point, at 86, she wasn't doing very well. She was mentally there, but she was in a nursing home at that point. And
say, you're old and tired enough, never mind to be dealing with all this and trying to figure it out.
She did make a connection with the niece, though, and they ended up talking a few times. They never got to meet in person before she passed away, but she was more excited to find that she had another relative that didn't leave her on the side of the road.
Right.
So that's pretty much it. She found her parents' identity, but she never got any answers as to why she was left in the desert. Like, the parents were married, so it's not like, I guess they're thinking that they just didn't want people to know that they conceived a child out of wedlock, because that was a thing back then. But it just seems crazy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And there's no answer really as to how she got... They're chalking it up to just a stroke of luck that she was found so quickly on the side of the road.
Right. I feel like that's the part that would bother me more than, like, not knowing who my parents are. It's like, why? You're like, right, how, exactly. You know, like, how that came to be.
Mm-hmm. Like, why on the side of the road in the middle of the desert?
Right?
I don't know. I guess that's what happened back then. So she passed away that same year. That was in 2018 at 86. No concrete answers, but she really... There's some videos of her with that article online that she expressed a lot of gratitude for all the people that have been so interested in her story over the years. And she said that those people are pretty much her family because they know everything about her. And so she... died with people around her that loved her, even though there was no real family connection to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's the Hatbox Baby.
Wow. I've never heard of that.
I know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's crazy how long she went to with, like, without knowing.
Yeah. I can't imagine at 55 finding out that you were adopted.
I know, right? I'd just kind of be like, huh. Like, it's like, would you even care too much? I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't know.
I don't know.
What that feeling's like, but when you're, like, almost 60, just be like,
oh. Mm-hmm. It'd be, like, such a range of emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I'm checking where my food is really quick because...
You're door dashing.
Yeah.
You want to go
not
on
even not
rant?
No, my only rant is I hate that on Grubhub, they're not completely transparent as to where the restaurant is that you're getting food from. I accidentally ordered food from a place, not that anyone knows where it is, but Wyndham, New Hampshire. I just wanted sushi, and I ordered it before we signed on, so was that like an hour ago? And it's still on the way. It says now that ETA is 125.
Yikes.
I haven't eaten yet today, so getting a little hangry.
I was going to say, now it's your turn to be hangry.
I know. It's my turn to go on a rant. At least I don't have a doorbell, so.
Are we ready for my story?
What do you get? I'm ready.
Big surprise. Another missing person, but this one does have a conclusion, at least, so.
Oh, yay.
My story is about Brian Histand. Brian was 25 years old and living in Phoenix, Arizona when he went missing. He was originally from the suburbs of Pennsylvania. He was known as a really great kid, great worker, and just an all-around really great and happy person. Growing up and ultimately continuing into his adulthood, he was a very active guy, and he grew up being a talented athlete, specifically in baseball when he was young. On top of that, he was really good in school. As an adult, he really took a liking to biking. It started out as mountain biking that his father did as well, so they got into it together. But then it grew into the more advanced BMX biking. And BMX stands for bicycle motocross and is defined as a bicycle race over a rough cross-country course, usually consisting of jumps, obstacles, and turns.
Yeah. Sounds sick, bro.
So it's like not, it's like a right, you know, like a regular bike, like it's not a motorized bike, but when they like flip off everything and like, you know,
yeah,
something I could never do. Well, I can fall off,
right?
But I can't.
Right, exactly. I could definitely flip off a bike, no problem.
So Brian's dad said BMX really changed Brian's life, and he could tell. It was clear how passionate Brian was about it. He was always doing tricks and was never shy to try new things or even crash. Some of his friends noted that Brian was all about street biking, which really consisted of maybe seeing like a set of stairs or a railing or a jump and just going for it. So like you're just riding around and you're like, cool, I'm gonna fly down those. Brian continued doing BMX throughout high school, college, and even after. He ended up being known in the BMX community. And I think I say this later, but I'm gonna say it now. It played a lot of the videos, like recorded videos of him, and I swear I've seen them before. There was one that like that was like a real bad, like he like landed on his face, and I was like, I'm pretty sure I've seen that before.
Was this in the 90s? Like when I missed the year that this happened.
I don't think I said the year.
So I remember that was like a really big thing, I think, in the 90s and early 2000s. Oh, okay.
Is so when he disappeared.
Too far away. Okay.
No. So Brian's passion for BMX grew more and turned into him making a lot of videos displaying different tricks and whatnot. He ended up getting known for the videos. I don't know if I already said that. Whatever. Oh, I think I missed a spot. Oh, that Brian's parents were concerned about it just because it's obviously pretty dangerous, right. And Brian wasn't scared to fall off, so. So he ended up moving to Phoenix because his girlfriend at the time lived there, so that's what got him out there. He quickly made friends there, especially in the BMX community. So out in Arizona, he ended up falling into a job that had to do with, like, t-shirt printing, that kind of stuff. He ended up making his own brand focusing on the BMX community. His brand he came up with was called Vail.
Vail.
So May 2013 was when Brian's parents got a call from the Phoenix Police Department about their son. Police had responded to a call in the early morning that there was a man out in one of the, like, alfalfa fields out there, and he was naked. By the time police arrived, Brian did have his clothes on, but he was still acting strangely. He was sitting in the field just kind of, like, staring off. Police first thought was some sort of substance abuse, but ended up coming to the conclusion that that didn't seem likely. When police asked Brian what was he was doing out there, he responded with he was communing with nature, he was speaking to God.
Oh, okay. He's 25?
Yes.
Okay.
Police said that Brian was coherent and he knew the answers to all the questions they asked. He knew who he was, where he was, all those kinds of questions. They did note, though, that there was a delay to Brian's speech, so, like, they'd ask him a question, he'd pause for, like, an odd amount of time, but then answer correctly. And Brian also told the police that he had lost his keys and wallet in the field, so that was another reason for him being out there. Police stayed with him for about an hour, gave him some water, and they just went on their way, leaving Brian seemingly fine.
Oh, okay. They just left him out in the field?
Yeah.
To talk to Jesus?
Yep. So Brian's dad said he was a little put off by Brian's behavior, but he wasn't overly concerned about it at first. That ended quickly, though, because 36 hours went by and Brian's parents hadn't heard from their son. One of Brian's father's co-workers, so Brian's dad was a police officer himself, contacted him saying that an officer at the Phoenix PD was trying to get in touch with him. The dispatcher in Arizona that was trying to get in contact with Brian's dad happened to be one of Brian's friend's mom. And they were really concerned about Brian's welfare. So it was a little like, it was somebody who personally knew him.
Right.
That was on the police force, you know, in Arizona. So Brian's roommate hadn't seen or heard from Brian for about 4 days. Meanwhile, Brian's dad is on the search for his son. He can't get in touch with Brian himself, even via Facebook. His dad reached out to Brian's friends, and they hadn't seen him. And this is when his dad issued a missing persons report. So at this point, Brian had not been seen since his, interrelation? I don't even know what that means. I would assume it's interaction. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. With the police in the alfalfa field. When the area was searched again, Brian's keys and wallet were found in the field. And his car was also found with his bike locked in it. Oh. So I'd say that suggests wherever Brian went and whatever happened to him shortly after that. I didn't do the best writing this. So that suggests that wherever he was or whatever he did, he left on foot or like got into somebody else's car because he didn't have his keys, his wallet, and he didn't have his bike, and he didn't have his car.
Yeah.
Brian's family is still miles and miles away in Pennsylvania, so they're doing the best they can from a distance. They're getting in contact with anyone they can over there, specifically police, but time just got longer and longer without anyone seeing or hearing from Brian. When police really began their search 2 days after Brian was officially reported missing, pretty much they were worried Brian had gotten deeper into the mountains, kind of like we were talking about earlier, how it's just like wilderness and like vast and crazy.
Yeah. Right.
So they were worried that he got deeper into the mountains that were all around the alfalfa field that he was in. The mountains were dangerous, especially on foot. You could easily succumb to the elements or easily fall and get hurt on those specific mountains that were kind of all around where he was last seen.
When interviewing Brian's dad on the Disappeared episode, he said, and this was kind of around this point in the investigation, he was trying to do as much as he could from far away, but one of his coworkers up there sat him down and was like, you have to go out there. Yeah, and his dad, definitely. Like, when it was showing his dad talking, he, like, started to cry and was getting real emotional, and because it going out there made the whole thing real.
Yeah. Right.
So police and search parties were out looking in the area that Brian was last seen in. It became evident that the elements really posed a danger. I guess in Arizona, May is a transitional month, meaning you can have weather in the 70s and 80s, and then it can just go crazy and, like, get up into the hundreds.
Oh.
Unfortunately, right around the time Brian disappeared was when temperatures were getting that high and even hotter.
Hmm.
So police were saying that Brian had seemed to already be outside for a while and may have underestimated the heat from the start and could have gotten himself into trouble just being out in the heat like that.
Right, yeah. Like, I wonder how long he was out in the field before police found him. Like, I wonder if he was already having some sort of heat exhaustion, talking to God, and then they left him, so it just got worse, you know? But then where would he have gone, I guess?
So, police did note that in the area where Brian disappeared, there were canals that had water in them that all went into these alfalfa fields. A lot of unhoused people would reside in those areas because there's water there and there's shade. On the side of these little canals, too, there was, like, just, like, bushes and some trees and whatnot that also provided shade. So, like, there were a lot of, like, little small camps that were there. And it was just mostly right. by unhoused people. But they were hoping that, like, maybe Brian would be found in one of those. And, you know, he just decided to kick it out there, I guess.
Yeah.
But despite all the searching, they still had absolutely nothing. At this point, it's been 17 days. Police suggested now that maybe Brian had left willingly. Which they always suggest. He had been going through some struggles shortly before he went missing. He and his girlfriend had recently broken up, and Brian took that really hard. His grandmother had also just passed away, which he also took really hard. And on that same trip back from his grandmother's funeral, he learned his mother was also having health troubles, and that ended up being lung cancer.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, so he definitely had a lot going on.
Poor guy.
I know.
I'm just going to grab my food from outside. Hold on one second.
Go get your sushi. Oh,
I know. Okay. I just didn't want it boiling out there.
You don't want your raw meat boiling? I mean raw fish?
No. Okay, so everybody in his life is dying.
Right, pretty much. Right, it's girlfriend broke up with him, and his grandmother died, and his mom's really sick. So, I guess a few days before his disappearance, Brian's behavior was noticeably odd. He had gone on a hike with one of his friends over the weekend, and his friend said that maybe Brian was a little off, but nothing crazy. His behavior really started getting odd when he went to work on Monday. They interviewed his boss on this episode of Disappeared, and she had so many good things to say about Brian. But she was able to really speak on his behavior change shortly before he disappeared. Hmm. She said on Monday, Brian had showed up to work but was cleaning like crazy the entire day. He was just like thoroughly cleaning absolutely everything. And she got a call later in the day from the office manager saying Brian wanted to know if he could stay late because he felt like there was more cleaning to get done.
Hmm.
So Angie, his boss, said that was fine. What gets more odd is that at 6 a.m. the next day, Brian was still there. He clearly had been there all night cleaning, and it was noted that he, like, did a good job, like, he was doing it, but... So after this, his boss was kind of like, okay, like, thanks for cleaning all this, but why don't you go home and get some rest?
Yeah, seriously.
Which at first it seemed like Brian did, because he did leave. But around 11 a.m. that same morning, one of the people that worked at the print shop saw Brian sitting on the side of the road with a bag of garbage. The coworker even took a picture of Brian sitting on the side of the road like that. It seemed like Brian had just been out there picking up trash.
Huh.
Everyone from Brian's dad to his boss and coworkers just had a strong feeling something was mentally wrong with Brian while this was going on.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. So at this point, everyone is just trying to put together the pieces of exactly what happened in the last moments Brian was accounted for. After he had picked up the trash in that lot a coworker had seen him at, he drove south to a random house and walked up to the door, insisting that it was his house and the owner of the home needed to leave. So Brian drove to some random house and, like, walked up to the door and was like, this is my house, like...
Yikes.
And, like, Brian didn't know who this guy was, and the homeowner did not know Brian. The homeowner did say this interaction seemed like one with someone who was not totally there. Police were called, but Brian left with no disruption. This is when he drove to the alfalfa fields, where he was seen naked, and police eventually showed up.
I forgot that he was naked in the field. That's another thing. It's like, you're just gonna leave a guy naked in the middle of a field?
Well, by the time the police got there, he had his clothes back on.
Oh, okay.
And it gets to who, I think one of his, I think I talk about, like, who found him. I think somebody, like, approached him when he was naked and was like, bro, what are you doing? And then, like, that's when he put his clothes back on. I think I get to
that. Okay.
So at this point, it seemed most likely that maybe mental illness was playing a part in what happened to Brian. His dad stayed firm, though, on the fact that Brian had never, ever had shown any signs of mental illness besides the week before he disappeared. Which brings up another concern, the fact that Brian has hit his head so many times doing different tricks and whatnot from all the BMX stuff.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, it showed a few different videos of Brian crashing, and there was one of really bad of him whacking his head off the concrete after, like, jumping from really high up.
Yikes.
So, basically, they haven't been able to find Brian whatsoever. They're pretty confident that they would have found him had he succumbed to the elements, because, like, he probably wouldn't have gotten that far.
Right, yeah.
By the end of the episode, everyone was just kind of hopeful that Brian was alive and okay out there, and he just chose to kind of live a nomadic life and was doing well. So at the end of that episode, they had not found him. By the end of when they filmed that disappeared episode, they had not found him. But his remains were found in 2016. He was found pretty close to the area that he disappeared from. And by that point, it was just his bones that they found. They were able to identify that it was him, but couldn't tell much else. And they did say that they didn't suspect that there was any foul play involved. But...
Oh, poor guy.
How was he right there and nobody found him?
Right, exactly.
Something's weird.
Yeah, because I don't even think alfalfa grows that big. Like, it's not like corn stalks that you wouldn't be able to find him or anything.
Right, and, like, they searched the entire area right around there. Like, you would have seen a body. A full body. Right. Like, you would have found that. And then you were able to find bones 3 years later? Like...
Yeah. Huh.
Something's weird about it. And the fact that they just, like, the last kind of statement... I was trying to look up anything, and I was like, why? I was just Googling, like, why was he found? Like, why isn't it weird that he was found right there? Like, why is nobody thinking this is odd? But I couldn't find anything. The only thing that was really out there was they said that they didn't expect there was foul play. Which, I don't know, that kind of sounds like, to me, like, they're just not saying something else, you know?
Right.
For whatever reason.
Or, like, they messed up and didn't search as well as they should have or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point, too.
Did the parents ever go out there and help look, do you know?
Or I think so. Stay? His mom was not part of this interview, and I didn't look it up, but I assume she had passed away or maybe just was too sick to do anything. I don't know. His dad they talked to. His dad did go out there, and, like, that's what they had, like, search parties. Like, it interviewed some people that did the search parties. Like, they were all over that area.
Yeah, that's really strange.
Yeah. So we don't know what happened.
Yeah. When you said there was a resolution to it before, I thought it was going to be kind of like the last story you had where they ended up finding him somewhere random in the middle of an episode or something.
Oh, no.
Guess not.
Nope.
Ah, poor guy. Well, at least they found something and it's not just...
Yeah, it's nice for his dad to
no
have
explanation.
Some closure, but it's definitely... I don't know, if I was his dad, I'd be like, something happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't tell me he was just right there the whole time and nobody could find him.
Right, yeah. Because even if animals ate him or something, you would have found something. Like, there would have been clues, flies, something.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you can't tell me that a body was there the whole time. And, like, obviously, if there was no foul play, that means he was there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Like, I don't know.
Damn, damn. Well, that was a good one.
Thanks.
I liked it.
You want to brighten the mood with some fun facts?
Yeah. I just have one. It's an Arizona fact. So the big draw in Arizona, obviously, is the Grand Canyon. So when I was looking up facts, they were pretty much all had to do with the Grand Canyon. So it's hard to picture it, but there's more than a billion years worth of rock exposed at the Grand Canyon. Like, that's how old everything is there, which wow. is crazy to think about. Yeah. It said that you won't find fossils in the Grand Canyon because the rock formations are so much older than the dinosaurs themselves. So that's how old it is. Like, they were around way before dinosaurs, everything.
That's pretty cool. I did not know that.
Yeah. I've never seen the Grand Canyon. Have you? Have you been there?
No.
Me neither. I want to go.
I thought the Grand Canyon was in Colorado.
Let me look it up. I'm pretty sure it's Arizona. I mean, I looked up Arizona facts and all the stuff was Grand Canyon related. I definitely, if anything, I would have thought maybe it was in
Arizona.
Nevada. Because I think it's not that far of a drive from Las Vegas. Oh, you looked it up already. Yep, it's in Arizona. And I think it's like, it's way bigger than you could even picture in your head.
The Colorado River goes through the Grand Canyon.
Oh, maybe that's what you were thinking of. Because you know a lot about rivers, so you're probably just mixing stuff up.
Since when do I know a lot about rivers?
I'm just kidding. It's just it was a stupid joke.
Oh.
Because you don't. I'm assuming you might know a lot about rivers that I don't know about.
No, I don't know. Clearly, I don't know a lot about much if I thought the Grand Canyon was in Colorado.
I read something that that it was something like 87 people have died, like, just from falling over the edge of the top of the canyon. And out of the 87 people, it was some crazy number, like 60 of them were men.
Hmm.
And 20 of them were from, like, jumping from one rock to another over the canyon. Like, people are so dumb.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I can't imagine that fall to your death. That has to be scary.
Yeah, fucking terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Right. Well, you want to go eat your sushi?
Yes, I'm gonna just give our quick closing. Oh, yeah. Next episode, we're going to be talking about South Carolina. So if you have any headlines, personal stories, true crime cases, or any fun facts you want to share with us, please send us a DM or email either at whathaveyoudonepod@gmail.com or whatHaveYouDonePod on Instagram. Remember to check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We put out episodes every first and third Wednesday of the month. Listen, shares, and ratings go a long way. So please, if you could listen and give us a thumbs up or 5 stars or anything, that'd be great.
That would be fantastic. Thanks for listening.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks. See everybody later.
Bye.
Bye.